One of this season's hit films is the erotic thriller Sea of Love, starring Al Pacino. It was directed by my guest Harold Becker, whose other films include The Onion Field, Taps, Vision Quest, and The Boost. In Sea of Love, Pacino plays a cop investigating a serial killer whose victims have all placed personal ads in a New York weekly. To try and lure the killer, Pacino places his own ad. One of the women who responds is played by Ellen Barkin. He makes a date to meet her at a restaurant.
You know, it's interesting you're coming from York, Pennsylvania, because in a way, you went from York to New York.
You like the park and I like the beach. You like movies, I like plays. You're a printer, I manage a shoe store. And I don't believe in wasting time on this kind of stuff. You know what you know, and you go with it.
You go with what?
You're just not my type.
I mean, just sat down. Give a little bit of time.
I believe in animal attraction. I believe in love at first sight. I believe in this, and I don't feel it with you.
Well, I'm hell on wheels once you get to know me, honey.
It's nothing personal.
Oh, come on. Where are you going?
I think Pacino's last movie before Sea of Love was Revolution, which was set in the Revolutionary War.
And right.
He was really criticized for playing the movie with this thick New York accent. People thought he was really in a slump. Were you confident when you took over directing this film that he'd be capable of not only a good performance, but the kind of really terrific performance he gives in the film?
Oh, I never questioned it. Never questioned it. The inspiration for my involvement in the picture was to work with Pacino, because I felt he had this enormous talent, potential, everything. And I did feel as Pacino went, so would go the picture. I just felt he had the magic to carry it across.
Pacino has a reputation for doing a lot of takes in each scene until he's satisfied. Was that the case with Sea of Love?
Yes, to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
Al is a perfectionist, and he is somebody who continuously works towards giving you more and more. In fact, you can say he also is somebody who gives you with each take something else. So it isn't a question of somebody just repeating themselves.
What are the variations like from take to take in one of his scenes?
It could be a question of intensity, a spontaneity, focus. Sometimes there was a loss of focus that he would regain in a later take. Sometimes he had it right from the first moment, and other times it was something else he was reaching for. Sometimes it was something that I was after. Another time it was something that he had in his mind that he hadn't gotten out in those takes and wanted another one for it.
If you felt satisfied with the take that he gave, but he wanted to do it again, would you defer to him?
Absolutely. I mean, within reason, of course, because it was almost like somebody saying, I have something else to say, and it would be incumbent upon you to listen to them.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a certain strategy in shooting Pacino, in getting the kind of look that you wanted from him?
Yes, I did have a strategy. I quickly came to realize that he had such an expressive face that he was able to capture so much of the nuances in the close-up that I probably use more close-ups in this film than I've ever used before. Hopefully it's not noticeable because I hopefully mix them well enough with wide shots, but I did use many more. I did a lot of close-up with Al.
Let's talk about Ellen Barkin's performance and directing her. Throughout the movie, you never know whether she's innocent or dangerous. How did you try to bring out both sides of her in that performance?
It was a very difficult role to play in that sense because it was walking a tightrope. You're very right about that. We couldn't allow her to go too soft, too warm. On the other hand, if we just took all of that out of the performance, then the love story would suffer. And so it was endlessly going back and forth, and we tried to keep a narrow line through it all.
She has a very interesting face and a very unusual face. Her nose is a little crooked. Her face is slightly asymmetrical. So when you're doing close-ups of her face, what are you looking for? What are you thinking about?
It's a very, very attractive face.
It's a gorgeous face.
Yes, which that sort of broken, those broken features somehow add up to something more than maybe a more perfect face might. And it, within the context of this film, I think that it was a perfect face for this film. And certainly in the close-ups, I had my, I worked out camera angles, etc., which I thought worked best for Ellen. And we worked very, very closely with hair, makeup, etc., to get the quality we were after with her.
There's a very erotic scene between Pacino and Barkin in which they're both really aroused but both terribly paranoid. It's erotic but dangerous. Did you choreograph that scene?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. A scene like that had to be choreographed.
Now, did you do the choreography yourself?
No, I worked it out with the actors. I had certainly came to it prepared with... I had an idea of what I was after and then worked it out with the actors.
Can you give us a sense of some of the things that you worked out in the choreographing of that love scene?
Well, it's first of all, when you're doing a love scene, it involves a certain physicalness. I don't care whether you're even just talking about a kiss, you're talking about dress, undress, how clothes come off. All of this is very physical. I mean, it all seems natural, hopefully, when one sees a film, but some of it can be very awkward, as we all know. And one wants to avoid the awkwardness. One wants things to seem spontaneous. All of that requires working out. I mean, it's working out right down to where one's arms are in a specific situation, to what side one's face goes in a kiss, you know, in terms of how it favors the camera.
I guess you don't want faces to look squashed or anything.
Of course, there's... The thing has to have almost a ballet quality to it without seeming to be stylized.
Films are often shot out of sequence. But I think in a suspense film, it's maybe even more important than in any other kind of film to shoot in sequence so that you remember what level of paranoia and suspense you're at. Did you shoot in sequence for this?
No, we didn't shoot all together in sequence, but I did try to hold back the most emotional scenes. As you say, the scenes where the paranoia was really running high, down into the middle to the end of the schedule. So that by that time, the actors are well into the film and already have a feeling. It would be awful to try to do those kind of scenes early on in the film. But in terms of having the luxury of shooting it in complete sequence, you know, no, that wasn't done.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, we did pay attention to it, yes. Of course, I paid a lot of attention to that.
When you were shooting street scenes on the streets of Manhattan,
right,
were there ever real people on the streets in addition to extras?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I don't know if you remember the last scene on 57th Street where Al is walking down the street with Ellen. A pedestrian bangs into him and literally knocked him out of the shot. And
exactly.
He runs back into it.
Yeah.
That was an accident. That occurred because somebody just walked right into the shot and walked right through it. That was not planned at all. And once it happened, I knew it was going to be part of the film because Al recovered so wonderfully because he was able to take it and use it as part of his whole performance. But there's an example of... it's very hard in New York to keep people out of a scene.
Now, the first time I saw James Woods in a leading role was in The Onion Field, which you directed, and
right.
he played a cop killer in it, and it was an incredible performance. Were you involved in casting him in that role?
Oh, yes, very much so.
Why did you choose
him? Very much so. I chose him because I felt that as an actor, he simply was the best actor I could get for the part. Interestingly enough, when I was casting, another actor had come in who really was a lookalike for the actual Greg Powell. Remember, that was a true story, and
right.
These people were alive, albeit in San Quentin, but alive. And Joe at that time got very excited about using the other actor.
This is Joseph Wambau who wrote it.
Wambau, right. And we had to do a screen test in order to convince Joe that... Jimmy was the right actor for it. And, of course, before it was over, none of us, and looking back, can even think there was another actor who could have done this.
He's got such intensity. Did you ever find you almost had to tone him down?
No.
Mm-hmm.
No. He he really crawled into the skin of that man. And I just ran the onion field with Joe the other day. We hadn't seen it in years. And we were, again, just stunned by his performance, by all the performances in it. The reality of it still came through with just unbelievable intensity.
Sea of Love has been doing quite well. How's that going to affect your career as a director, do you think? Do you now have more of a choice in what your next project will be?
Well, the problems always remain, which is to find good material. And hopefully your dream always is there, is that it will open the door to more good material, of course. But I don't have any illusions that there is some room out there that I'm now going to be given the key to in which all the good material is. It's still always a problem of finding material, developing material, and of course, there's no doubt that I'm in a better position at this point to explore certain material that might not have been available to me before.
Harold Becker, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.